Welcome to Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Here's Cole Thompson.
And here we go. Welcome into Just Saying It right here on the SportsMap Radio Network. Cole Thompson back in the driver's seat. Getting caught up on everything you might have missed. Headed into a fun Monday morning action. 800-224-2004. Call the show. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you hate. Let's be real. You love everything about this show. We know you love everything about this show. And we want to hear from you, the listeners. So make sure you tune in. 800-224-2004. At Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter. At SportsMap Radio. Download the Just Saying It podcast version of the show on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, Audio Boom. Wherever else you get your podcast listening systems, we got you covered 24/7, 365 days out of the year. And make sure you also download the SportsMap Radio app, curious in your pocket throughout your day, so you don't miss a second of all of our great local programming. The wonderful, delightful Michael Hernandez on the other side of the glass producing fun final hour planned ahead. The one team that has made enough moves this offseason to be viewed a contender in the NFL only got stronger on Sunday night when they added in one more big-time player. We had an upset. We did not have an upset. We had a colossal upset of upsets of all time in the likes of the first round of the NCAA tournament. Why Fairleigh Dickinson will go down as the greatest upset win in the history of the sport. I'll break that down a little bit. And why I believe there is one team that should feel confident when they add in a quarterback, why they are going to be viewed as maybe not a contender, but certainly a name on the rise that should be in the postseason playoff conversation. But each and every day at this time, we go around the NFL breaking down some of the biggest storylines you might have missed, and we do so in 2 minutes or less. Hence the reason we call it the 2 minute warning. And this segment is brought to you by Blue Chew. SportsMap's coverage of the tournament action is all sponsored in part by Blue Chew. Blue Chew has the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at the fraction of the cost. You want your team to perform in the big game, and we want you to perform in the moments that matter most. For more information, go visit BlueChew.com and go ahead and get that little blue pill that makes your life that much easier today. Oh, Michael! Start the clock.
The Carolina Panthers are adding a veteran to their roster. The Panthers are signing former Vikings wide receiver Adam Thielen to a 3-year deal, according to reports. The team later announced the news. Minnesota released Thielen on March 10th after 9 seasons with the team.
This is a good move. I really do like this move. And the main reason why is because if you're a young roster, what you're looking for is certainly a veteran who can act as that component for your team in terms of the passing game. Thielen's going to be a security blanket. He's going to be a player that probably takes a little bit of pressure off of if you add in a young receiver. And it allows your quarterback to be able to prosper by having a guy who's been around the block and worked with a variety of different passers. Not to mention, it doesn't take you out of the realm of drafting a wide receiver for the long run. And it's on a very cost-affordable deal. Do I think that 3 years was a little bit too much? Yeah, I would say so. But 3 years is really actually 2 years when you look at the guaranteed money. This is a team that feels like that after losing DJ Moore, they had to upgrade somewhere. You do so with Thielen. I think that when you also add in the offensive personnel perspective of what Frank Reich wants to run, he's going to be a good fit. So even though I think that Thielen could have been on a better team on a lesser deal, $33 million, it's not the end of the world. At the same time, also, any young quarterback would love to have a guy like number 19 on their roster. And probably the biggest thing of all, I think that this will keep Carolina in the postseason conversation. Doesn't mean they're going to be an actual contender. In fact, I think that Carolina is probably 2 or 3 years away from making that jump into upper echelon NFC balance. But still, they did enough to where if you bring in Thielen, you like where this team is overall headed.
Brandon Cook is on the move once again. The Cowboys are acquiring the veteran wide receiver from the Texans in exchange for a 2023 fifth-round pick and a 2024 sixth-round pick. Dallas has announced since has announced the trade. Cook's journey to the Cowboys comes after a tumultuous 2022 season in Houston, during which he expressed his unhappiness with the club after he wasn't dealt at the trade deadline. Cooks, whose captaincy with the club was revoked by season's end, still led the Texans in receptions with 57 and receiving yards with 699 and 13 games played, while adding 3 touchdown scores. Cooks, who turned 30 in September, should slide into a Cowboys offense that lacked a vertical threat during their 2022 playoff run, scoring only 12 points against the 49ers in the divisional round. The Cowboys' second receiver behind CeeDee Lamb and in the defeat was Noah Brown, who had 2 receptions for 21 yards. The presence of Cook should open things up for Lamb and Michael Gallup, who is expected to be at full strength following his comeback season in 2022 after recovering from a torn ACL.
It's a good move. On paper, it's a really good move, and this should be what Dallas is looking for. They didn't give up the bank to be able to bring in the number 2 receiver. They are paying a little bit more than probably expected, but Houston still ate up, if I'm not mistaken, nearly $7 million of the deal. So it is a little bit more of a team-friendly contract, and he's a very good number 2 that will be able to pair, I think, extremely well with what CeeDee Lamb does at his best. But still, this is Dallas we're talking about. Until I see Dallas play up to Dallas's strengths, I'm not going to believe any of it. And I don't think anybody should. So whether or not you like what you've seen from Dallas and how they bring in the right personnel, because this is a very good receiver who I think fits at what they're doing best, it doesn't change the fact that this is still Dallas. And Dallas is a roster that not just on paper fails to meet expectations every single year, but puts the wagon well ahead of the horse. I'm not going to say that Dallas today is a worse team without Brandon Cooks. They're a much better team. But to put them in that conversation of top 3 in the NFC, why would I? Why would anybody for that matter? Even with a great defense, an excellent offensive line, better wide receiver play, and good quarterback play, Dallas has had less talent or more talent and done less with more. So I don't know how anybody this morning can say, you know what, Dallas, this move, this is the one that sets them over the edge. Because every year we say the exact same thing about Dallas. And you know what they are? A one and done in the playoffs, or an even bigger disappointment once they get past that first round because the expectations raise 10 times over.
Rashad Penny joined the Philadelphia Eagles this week on a low-cost one-year contract. One-year contract despite owning a career 5.7 yards per attempt average over 5 seasons in Seattle. The former first-round pick's chronic issue has been staying healthy. Penny has never played a full season slate. In the past 3 seasons, he's appeared in just 18 games. In Week 5 of 2022, Penny went down with a broken fibula. When healthy, Penny has proven he can do big things. In the past 2 seasons, he's averaged 6.2 yards per carry on 176 attempts for 1,095 yards with 8 touchdowns. Down the stretch of the 2021 campaign, finally healthy, Penny generated four games of 135-plus yards in the final five tilts. He added a 151-yard performance in Week 4 of the 2022 and was on his way to another potential big game, 54 yards on 8 carries in Week 5, before suffering a season-ending injury.
I feel really great. I just feel like 17 games is really important, and I know in my right mind that being here, being an Eagle, great strength and training staff, you know, great coaches, they all take good care of their players here, so you know, I'm excited to be here. And
yeah, you know, to me, it's a really good fit on paper. Like, Penny going to replace Miles Sanders is actually huge, but part of the reason why is because of it's a better offensive line. Penny's actually been a really good player when he's on the field. The problem is he's never on the field. Like, every year he was in Seattle, he was completely hampered by the likes of injuries, whether it be torn ACL, shoulder injury, a thigh injury, a shin injury. Something would always hurt his production that kept him out of the realm of possibility. So I look right now, it's one of the better offensive lines in the league. You got that box checked. Number 2, you feel very confident in the wide receiver play to where the pressure won't be on Penny to be that go-to guy like it was supposed to be in Seattle. And number three, you have a mobile quarterback, which I think takes a little bit more pressure off of your carries. Staying healthy for a full 17-game season, that honestly is probably the biggest asset and the one thing that you do need if you are Penny to have another year in the NFL.
Cincinnati sees the opportunity to upgrade at left tackle this week. Unfortunately for Jonah Williams, the upgrade means his job is in jeopardy. Williams has reacted in kind, requesting a trade through his agent. The offensive lineman is seeking a new start somewhere else after the Bengals went fishing for the top left tackle on the market in Orlando Brown and were able to land him with a deal that included the largest signing bonus, $31 million ever, given to an offensive lineman. Left tackle wasn't necessarily a position of priority, but signing Brown provided the Bengals with an upgrade and multi-year security ahead of an anticipated extension for Joe Burrow. Williams is entering his fifth and final year of his rookie contract, which is scheduled to pay him a guaranteed base salary of $12.6 million. Cincinnati can clear the entirety of that number from its cap by trading him, but likely won't recoup the first round pick the Bengals spent on him in 2019.
I feel like that it's challenging. It's very challenging because on paper, you really want Jonah Williams to be here because your team is better with Jonah Williams. But the problem is that Orlando Brown, who in my opinion is a much better right tackle than he is left tackle, is getting paid to be a left tackle. So if you can't have those conversations to where you can either move Williams inside to guard, which would be a huge benefit by keeping Lyle Collins, then what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to find a way to trade him, which ends up hurting your team in the long run. So it's really a lose-lose no matter what for a guy like Jonah Williams. There you have it. 2 minute warning. Right here, I'm just saying it.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
8 seconds left. Smith drives, blocked from behind with 1.5 on the clock. The lob, and that will do it. Do you believe it? For just the second time ever, a 16 beats a 1.
It feels awesome. It was an unbelievable night for us, and I didn't get much sleep. Obviously, no one got any sleep, but that's a great trade-off for a historic win and a great opportunity for our players and our school and our programs. I wanted to make sure we had a belief that we could win. You know, because we know a lot of times when you play a top seed, it's you know, you're the underdog. We're supposed to lose. So for us to go in there with a belief that we could win was great.
We got to box out. We got to rebound. We got to be tough. We got to be scrappy. We have to be that way tomorrow night.
That being the likes of Tobin Anderson, head coach of Fairleigh Dickerson, following a massive win over number one seed Purdue. Welcome to the history books, FDU. And do you believe in the future of where this team could go? 800-224-2004. It's Cole Thompson just saying it right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. This, to me, will go down in history as the best 16 number one seed win of all time. And why is that? Well, I'm glad that you asked, ladies and gentlemen, because when you look at the only other time that this has happened in the history of the sport, it's only happened because of basically a technicality. So when University of Maryland Baltimore County won as the number 16 seed over Virginia back in 2017, if I'm not mistaken, they at least did enough to be able to continuously consider where they were. You got to remember, this was a team where the Retrievers were a part of a conference that they actually won. They had over 11,000 graduate students. They had 13,000 people there. What I loved about this game, though, was when you look at a team like Baltimore County, they found a way to put themselves in the likes of that conversation. They actually earned their way to make it in the NCAA tournament. This time around, FDU did not do that. FDU is not a team that when you looked at, you said absolutely they were here to win. They were going to be a team to watch for. They had a play-in game. Not only that, they had a play-in game just to be in the play-in game. And what I mean by that is, does anybody know what conference FDU plays in? Well, if you don't, I'll just tell you right now and make your time that much easier. They're part of the Northeast Conference. In the Northeast Conference alone, they would actually not qualify to make the NCAA tournament this year. That actually belonged to Merrimack, the Warriors, but the Warriors could not make the NCAA tournament due to a rule change that forced them to stay out of this year's tournament because they were doing a transition from Division II to Division I. So because of that, FDU sneaks in as the last of the resort teams. When I say this year you had last team in, FDU was the last team in. And even then so, they had to do a play-in game just to have the opportunity to face off against the likes of Purdue. They had to play Texas Southern to be able just to go ahead and punch their ticket to make the NCAA tournament in the round of 64. And then they get a win. And they get a win in stellar fashion. But the best part about this win was that even though they won't be moving on to the Sweet 16 and try and be the first 16 seed to actually accomplish a feat, you watch the way this team came together. They were balanced defensively. They boxed out Alex Edey. They made sure that Purdue could not get any shots off. And throughout the entire game, they held their own. From the first jump ball all the way until the final whistle, they absolutely were more consistent when it came to shooting. They were more consistent when it came to rebounding. They finished number one in almost every single category, and they led by 1 point at halftime. Usually when you lead by 1 point, that won't carry over. It did. And it carried over so much so that they actually outgained them 31-27 in the second half for a 63-58 win. But every capacity, they were a better team. 3-point shooting, they shot 34%. Purdue shot 19. Field goal percentage, 38.7%. Purdue shot 35. At the free throw line, the easy shots, the shots that are supposed to be main buckets, 80% for FDU, 78.9% for Purdue. They had more rebounds. They had fewer turnovers. They had more blocks. They had more assists. They had more fouls. They were, on paper, every way, shape, or form, better than Purdue. And to me, this is more telling of Purdue than it is for FDU. Because I want to give a lot of credit to FDU. They didn't belong here from the get-go. They actually were supposed to be sitting at home, and they end up finding a way to make it to the actual tournament, and they get a win. But now when you look at Purdue, it's kind of embarrassing. And I'm not trying to be that guy, because it seems terrible to say out loud, but think about it for a second. Purdue is a roster that every single year is one of the more complete teams in college basketball. This past year, they went 29-6. They were balanced. Not only that, they won the Big Ten. And they won the Big Ten in stellar fashion by absolutely dominating the level of competition and putting their team on their back. Matt Painter is one of the best coaches in college basketball that does not get the recognition that he deserves. They had one of the more premier players in Alex Edey this past year. And they were one of the best teams when it came to three-point shooting and when it came to points per game. They were just so consistent. But once again, Purdue finds a way to just absolutely mess it up. This year, losing to the number 16 seed. How about last year when they were number 3 seed in the Sweet 16? Losing to St. Peter's, another New Jersey team, a 15 seed. The year before that, first round, number 4 seed. Lose to North Texas in overtime, 78-69. 2 years before that, in the Sweet 16, they play a Texas Tech team that has one new coach, brand new coach in Chris Beard. He was only there for one season. That team ends up making it all the way to the Final Four championship, and they end up losing in close fashion to Virginia. The year before that, they lose number one seed to Kansas. That's not bad. The year before that, in 2016, as a 5 seed, they lose to Little Rock in overtime. And 2 years before that, in 2011, as a 3 seed, they beat St. Peter's as a 14 seed. And the next game, they get absolutely bonkers belittled by the likes of VCU. This is the new norm for Purdue. Like, as much as we go ahead and crap on Virginia for what they've been, it's not as if Purdue's been that much better. Fans have been waiting at the gates of hell to finally be able to enter eternity, and all that's happening is it's a bad joke one after another. This is what Purdue is. This is where the roster is. And unfortunately, it comes to the benefit of FDU having a game of their life and a moment that soon won't be forgotten. When I look at what you saw with UMBC against Virginia, that's a game that nobody should ever forget, and no one should ever take away from what they've done. But the team that I look for now is FDU as the better matchup. And that's not an insult to say what you had with UMBC was bad. What this is that FDU was the definition of definitions of definitions last team in. They were a roster that certainly was not supposed to be well built enough to go toe to toe with anybody, and they only got in because of a technicality due to Merrimack's positioning in the likes of college basketball. So you add all this together, you put all that on this docket, you make that as their focal point. How do you not consider this one of the biggest upsets in all of professional sports? I mean, this is up there with names that would be synonymous with any other sport. I mean, we're talking about when you think of consistency, playmaking, or just David versus Goliath. This has to be number one on the list. And why is that? Because there was no reason why FDU should have been in this tournament to begin with. Instead, they walk away with one of, if not the biggest win in the history of their program, and they also prove to the world, you know what? It's not about how you start, it's rather how you finish. 800-224-2004. Another team that has been making headlines, and in my personal opinion, really is going to do wonders for the future of their staff, is Princeton. So for Princeton, this is the biggest win of the last 25 years for the history. And why is that? Well, if you know anything about their coach, if you know anything about their program, they are very well put together in terms of who they are. You have Keith Anderson. He is the Mitch Henderson. My bad. Mitch Henderson. He is your head coach. Henderson was on the roster back in 1996 when Princeton got the upset win over the likes of UCLA as a 14 seed, and UCLA was a 3 seed. UCLA that year was projected by many to go to the Final Four and actually win the damn thing. And instead, Henderson was one of those guys who ended up getting off a key clutch shot and now has that same thing transpiring over. Purdue's a feel-good story. I mean, Princeton's a feel-good story, but they also proved in the last two games they're about as consistent as you like in terms of shooting. They're averaging over 36% for the field, not to mention they also have been great behind the three, and they've gone up against two teams in Arizona and Missouri that are more battle-tested and better opponents throughout the regular season. Now they have a chance to be able to upset Creighton and fight their way to the Elite Eight. And don't be shocked if the Tigers continue to pounce against level competition in March Madness.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
One free agent move that now makes you feel as if you are ready to win today. 800-224-2004. It's Cole Thompson just saying it right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. So for those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, there was one team that I believed in immensely going into the regular season this year. And I thought that if they were able to put together a good offseason, they would actually be viewed as more than just a front runner for the division title, but actually one for the entire conference title. And that, my friends, would be the Detroit Lions. Because Detroit is one of these rosters that last year took necessary steps forward in terms of proving to themselves, but more so, in my opinion, proving to the world that they are not going to go away quietly. This is a roster full of has-beens and no-names that never was able to garner the right capacity with people, especially in terms of what you're looking for when it comes to balance and consistency. You don't have the right head coach in Dan Campbell. This is a man that one time said biting off kneecaps was part of the mantra of what you need to play football. Brad Holmes was always considered the next other guy behind the likes of Les Snead. Snead was able to build up the Los Angeles Rams, but of course you have whatever you have with like a good old Mr. Brad Holmes standing in the wings. He can't go ahead and duplicate that same success. And Jared Goff was a quarterback that people thought was the loser in the deal of the Matthew Stafford trade. Instead, he ends up walking away with a top five offense last year that led the NFC North in scoring. But that's not the reason why Detroit did not make the playoffs and why they did not have a deep postseason run. The big reason was they didn't have the right balance defensively, especially in the secondary. It was one of the worst units in the NFL last year, and it didn't get better despite having more consistent play down the stretch. Even though I do think that you had more veteranship, it didn't mean it was good veteranship. Well, now you look at where a team like Detroit is going into the regular season, their secondary may actually end up being a strength. They brought over Emmanuel Mosley, the number two cornerback from the San Francisco 49ers, to be either their number one on the outside or their number two opposite of Jeff Okuda. They brought in a nickel defender that can do a little bit of everything in Cam Sutton, who showed that he can work on the outside or inside depending on the formation during his stint in Pittsburgh. And now last night, they added in C.J. Gardner-Johnson, the physical defensive back who's a safety that probably can play anywhere on your field as a multiple chess piece that has experience working not just with Dan Campbell, but also with defensive coordinator Aaron Glenn. If you wake up this morning and do not think that the Detroit Lions are in a great spot moving into the NFL draft, I politely disagree. Last season, they had a top five offense without a really predominant passing game. Yet still, they were able to benefit from having a good number one receiver in Amon-Ra St. Brown and consistency on the outside with guys like DJ Chark and Josh Reynolds. Chark is probably going elsewhere this offseason, and that's fine. He's probably earned the money elsewhere. But you now have Jameson Williams, who'll be coming off of the torn ACL, and when fully healthy, might end up being one of the best young receivers in the game today. Not to mention, you still have Josh Reynolds, and this is a very good class to add in number threes and fours receivers, just like this is a very good class to add in tight end play, another thing that you need to upgrade at. You look at the offensive line. It's one of the better units in the NFL. It's constantly being slept on, but I think that this year people will start really paying attention just to how physical they are up front, to where you don't have to worry about what they bring to the table. You already know that they're going to be consistent as all hell. The other big thing that I think is really important, it gives you opportunity. This free agent class now gives you opportunities to make moves in the draft. You don't have to be pigeonholed to one certain position. If you like a defensive lineman, go ahead and draft a defensive lineman because you could use the need, but it's not a dire need. If you like a defensive end, like a Will Anderson should he fall, or a Tyree Wilson should he fall, you draft said player at pick number six. If you like a cornerback, go ahead and take them in somewhere in the draft. You have 2 second-round picks, you have 2 first-round picks, and 3 picks inside the top 50. That's a win in my opinion. If you like the safety class, go ahead and add in a safety. You only have C.J. Gardner-Johnson on 1 year deal, but it's a damn good 1 year deal to where he could play opposite of Kirby Joseph. I think that you're feeling very consistent right now. And if you feel like that you want to go ahead and add in the quarterback for the future, you don't believe that Jared Goff is going to work past this season, or you worry that he's going to take a step back rather than a step forward, you now can feel confident doing so because of the moves that you made. You bring in a new running back in David Montgomery. He fits what Ben Johnson wants to run. You bring in more defensive talent for a guy like Aaron Glenn, an area of weakness last year that now turns into a strength. You also have Jared Goff as your starting quarterback that worked last season. So you know that last year was at least some bit of confidence that what's transpiring could at least be the start of something promising rather than the end of something that was negateful and probably a little bit selfish. I view right now the Detroit Lions as probably not the best team in the NFC. I think that title still belongs to the San Francisco 49ers. I don't think they're the second best team in the NFC because I think that title, until further notice, belongs to the Philadelphia Eagles, despite how much they're losing in terms of player productivity. But in terms of what you have with everyone else, Dallas, New York, Seattle, I'll throw even probably the likes of Minnesota in that conversation. Why can't Detroit be the number three team in the NFC? They have the quarterback, in my opinion, that can work. They have the offensive personnel that is only going to get better. And probably the biggest thing, and the one thing that really separates these two, is the moves made defensively in free agency allow you to make more riskier, but also probably beneficial moves in the draft. I call this a huge win for Detroit this morning. And as of today, it'd be very hard for me to say that they aren't the third best team in the NFC moving forward. 800-224-2004. So another team in the NFC that I think that we all have to be paying close attention to is a team that's picking number one. Because much like Detroit, they made enough moves in free agency to where you say they've been better off because of it. And it's Carolina Panthers. Carolina got aggressive to move up to that number one pick. And even though I do think giving up DJ Moore is going to hurt the team for the short term, think of it for the long run, if you will. To be able to land a franchise quarterback, it's going to cost you an arm and a leg. They don't grow on trees. It's why there's only 32 opportunities out there for a quarterback to get the title of QB1. And of those 32 quarterbacks, you would probably say over half of them, you would cut tomorrow if you had the opportunity. 13 usually is about the number of quarterbacks that you say are damn good at what they do. Well, if you land a premier player at pick number one, you may end up saying it doesn't matter what the asking price was. 10 first-round picks, 15 first-round picks, 6 first-round picks, and 6 second-round picks plus a proven player, it all would have been fine. Because if you are stable at the most important position, you have an opportunity to not just walk away victorious, but also be a contender every single year. What I really like about Carolina was they did get aggressive in free agency, and they may not be done. You lose DJ Moore, but you bring in Adam Thielen. That's a win in my book in terms of what you have with productivity for a young quarterback to develop. Not to mention, you're still in the conversation of adding in DJ Chark. Chark would be ending up as your replacement for Moore as your vertical presence. And in my personal belief, this should be the thing that would end up making you over the top in the NFC South. But they also got better in the run game. You lose Christian McCaffrey, you lose Deontay Foreman, but you add in Miles Sanders on a new offensive line that's gotten better over the last few years. They added in Akeem Okwuanu. They have Taylor Moton. They have Bradley Bozeman. I think Brady Christensen is an okay guard to where if you want to move off him, you could. If you want to keep him, you could. It's not the end of the world. This is a team that right now is trending in the right direction in all three phases. Defensively, they got better toward the end of the year. In fact, they were actually probably one of the better teams defensively by midseason underneath Steve Wilks. They have a good balance in terms of what they added in with the roster offensively. I think that they're not that far off offensively, also from being really well put together in terms of consistency. And they're a quarterback away from really separating themselves in terms of great talent versus good overall play. They have a good offensive-minded coach as well in Frank Reich, and they have a good young coordinator in the likes of Thomas Brown that will benefit from having a good balanced attack of what he learned underneath Sean McVay. So add all this together, they're a quarterback away from being a contender. That's number one. Number two, the moves that they did make in free agency, they feel very confident in. And number three, they also proved that even though that they had to trade up to add in a quarterback, what they did was they brought in the right amount of pieces to where you don't have to make the quarterback the star focal point. If they land the right guy, it's not that far-fetched to say that Carolina could be one of the better teams in the NFC. Not because of, I think, of what they have with the offensive talent, but because of what they have with the coaching staff that can develop the offensive talent. That is the biggest win of all in this thing that nobody seems to be paying attention to. Good coaching staff with good names added in free agency with a size amount of upside in a division that's very winnable. Add all this into one big bucket. It's hard to imagine anything other than a good 9-8, 10-7 win Carolina team that potentially could end up walking away victorious in terms of the NFC South Division winner. I like this Carolina team, and the moves they made, they make them a good enough contender.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
Welcome back into Just Saying It right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Cole Thompson in the driver's seat, getting you caught up in everything you might have missed, headed into a fun Monday action. 800-224-2004. Call on the show, tell us what you like, what you hate. Make sure you also download the Just Saying It podcast version of the show on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, Audio Boom, or make sure you also download the Sports Map Radio app. Carry it in your pocket throughout your day so you don't miss a second of all of our great local programming. Well, it's that part of the show. Cole's Calendar, where we break down the national holiday of every single day and give you our thoughts on what we like, what we hate, and let's be real, what actually does work out and what doesn't drive us up a wall. So, Michael, what do we have today for, what is it, March 20th?
Yes, March 20th.
God, time just keeps on flying by, man.
Yeah, it does. April, what, next weekend?
Yeah.
After this week, yeah. It's crazy.
Something like that.
We'll be, what, one third of the year done?
We will be, yeah, I think
One third will be 1/4 because it's 3. 1/3 it would do 4, but.
I say, something like that. We're definitely a third of the year done.
Yeah, we're getting there. It's crazy. So we have 2, but I'll throw in a third one in there.
So you have one that we don't have listed.
Yeah.
Or is it listed and there's like rules against it?
Nah, it's not. I didn't see it listed. So first one is National Ravioli Day.
National Ravioli Day.
Yes.
Do you like raviolis?
No.
You don't?
No.
I don't know.
I've never had it.
Wait, you've never had raviolis in your life?
No.
Dude, okay, you've got to at least try it once.
No.
Why?
It doesn't look appetizing.
Because of what? Because of the...
Chef Boyardee does not look appetizing.
That, but that's Chef Boyardee. That's not good. Raviolis.
No. Ravioli.
Give me the formula. Ravioli. Michael, eat raviolis. Come on, Bubba. You know you want it.
I don't even know what I have inside.
I think it's ricotta cheese.
Nah, I'm good.
What? Okay. Well, anyway, if you ever had deep fried raviolis, I will say they're amazing. But it's not the worst thing out there. I personally like raviolis. I think raviolis are one of the few food groups that I look at and go, you know what? I think I could actually enjoy this as a meal. Like, I will eat raviolis as a whole meal and be very much on board with it. So, I don't know where you hate, why you just hate fun and enjoyable things, Michael. But I personally think raviolis are a good sustenance for you. And that everybody should enjoy it at least once in their lifetime. That's just me.
Not a big pasta guy.
Okay, that's very fair. You aren't a big pasta guy. Like, and you have brought this up on the show before, is that you don't really like pasta. I don't know if I'm not a big pasta guy, because I like pasta, but I also like, I'm weird. Like, I'm not a big fan of spaghetti, but I am a really,
I like spaghetti,
but I am a big fan of linguine.
But like, it's rare when I eat spaghetti, like probably once a year.
Like, I don't like stuffed shells, which apparently is pasta. It's not pasta, it's shells. Like, no,
stuffed what?
Shell pasta.
So you just said it's pasta, though.
Yeah, I don't consider it pasta, but it's under the pasta category. Like lasagna is considered technically under the pasta category because of how when you pick up the pasta, like it's like lasagna is like found in the pasta aisle. It's not pasta.
What is it?
It's a meat tower.
What's it made from?
Pot.
There you go. Pasta.
It's not pasta. I'm going to die on this hill. 800-224-2004. Is lasagna pasta or not? I don't consider it pasta. I consider it a meat machine.
Second one is National Proposal Day.
Aw. Do you remember your proposal, Michael, to Betty?
Yeah.
How was it? How'd you do it? I don't think I've ever asked you the story on this one.
It was in Hawaii.
You did it in Hawaii?
Uh-huh.
That's nice.
Well, my initial planning was go to, it was in Maui, Haleakala National.
Where the volcano is?
Yeah.
Okay.
The dormant volcano.
Yeah.
So we went up there and I was planning to do it in sunrise.
Oh, that's, see, look at Michael Hernandez, the romantic on the other side of the glass.
I know you see pictures, you're like above like the world and stuff and you see the sun like, it's like nothing but clouds, and then you see the sun shining through.
Yeah.
So it looks really nice. But.
So what happened? Because there has to be a but in this whole thing.
Yeah, there's always a but.
There's always one. Yep.
But it was like the worst weather on that day.
So just rainy as all hell?
It was raining and windy, super windy. So you didn't see the sunset. I mean, the sunrise or anything like that.
See, I give Betty a lot of credit for just being like, oh, it's rainy, but let's just go ahead and fight through to try and get up and make it on the mountain for even a potential.
I mean, we went up there.
Yeah, but what time did you wake up?
2 a.m.
That's what I'm saying. You woke up at like 2 a.m, probably saw the weather, was like, ah, son of a gun, I can't believe this is going to happen. And then you pray to God it would all work out. And then it's just like, oh, yay, look at this.
Yeah, I woke up at 2 a.m. It was like a 2-hour, 2.5-hour drive.
Oh, you did the drive too?
Yeah, I mean, that's the only way to get there. You have to drive. And then since we're where that that national park is on the other side of Maui.
Yeah.
Because we were at, what's the name of it?
Sandals.
No.
Waikiki Beach.
No. No, that's the big island.
Is that Oahu or Kauai?
That's Oahu.
Okay.
In Maui, we were at this other side, because there's like sections to the island.
Yeah, naturally.
We were at the other side where the tournament usually is.
Oh, you were on where the golf tournament is every year.
No, the basketball tournament. The college basketball tournament.
Oh, the Maui Invitational?
Yeah.
Okay.
We were in that section of this. So you have to drive all the way to the other side. It was like a 2-hour drive.
Wow. Okay, so what'd you end up doing? Did you still propose up on the mount? I mean, on the...
No, we came back. She didn't know about it still. And I remember there was a tourist spot. Not a tourist spot, but a scenery spot.
Yeah.
Coming back, I was like, I'm going to do it there.
Aw.
I just did it there.
Did you take any photos?
It was just us two.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Did you not?
No. Because it was just us two. We had nobody. There was nobody there either. So it was just us two.
See, okay. Well, that... It's romantic because it's inclusive. I think that's the big thing.
Yeah. See, sometimes I'm hoping maybe somebody caught a picture of it to like TikTok.
Do you ever just go like onto Facebook and just go, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Michael Hernandez. If anyone saw me during the hours of 8:42 and 8:51, that was in the right location, geographical spot 69.6429 Western. With a 137 longitude.
Kilometer
like
45.
Yeah, kilometer 4. Can someone please send me the selfie you took? Like, do you ever just do that?
No.
See, my proposal was interesting. Because I wanted to throw Kirsten off the trail really big. So I invited a bunch of my friends to go with us on this wine tour. And then I got in an argument with her the night before. That way she would have no expectation whatsoever of me proposing. Like, that was what I did. And what the funny part was, I walked out. She went to bed. And my buddies and I are sitting outside. We're drinking a couple beers. And I'm like, hey, I heard you and Kirsten get in an argument. Is everything okay? I'm like, yeah, I did this on purpose. I want to go ahead and throw her off the trail. It's like, are you stupid? Why in the hell are you trying to fight with your future fiance the day before you actually propose? I'm like, well, she's not going to have any idea. She's just going to dump you before you have an opportunity to do so. And like that was the whole story. Like, everyone's just like, oh, yeah, here we go. Cole being a dummy once again. And that was exactly what happened. It was like I was sitting there the entire morning and she was not happy with me, like at all.
Yeah, bet.
And I was just like, don't worry. Wait 90 minutes. You'll be very happy in about 90 minutes. And like as soon as I did it, like she woke up and like is out of the funk and it was really good. And my parents were there and her parents were there and everyone showed up. It was really fun. So
nice.
I like that one. What was the third option though that you
had? So honorable mention is first day of spring.
I don't know if that should just be the answer.
No, I mean, it's not. I'm just throwing it
out
there.
But I feel like that should be the answer.
No, it shouldn't.
Okay. Is this the last year where we have the clock change?
Well, that's what they supposedly said, and then I found out that they haven't passed it yet, so I don't know.
So we're going to have to deal with this BS once again, potentially, in November.
I don't know.
Because
we'll see.
Because I'm annoyed still. Like, my body is still not used to it being 7:45.
Oh, I'm used to it. And it lies outside. I get home and just fall asleep.
No. It's good for us when we get home now because we pass out. But, like, I'm still not used to it being 7:45 at night.
And bright.
Because I can't sleep in brightness. I have to sleep in darkness.
So, quick fact. I asked Betty to be my girlfriend on June 22nd, which is the...
Longest day of the year?
The longest day of the year. It was 9 o'clock, and it was bright outside.
Is that when you asked her?
Yeah.
That's when you asked her?
Yeah. We went to the park, and I just asked her, and it was, like, super bright outside.
All right. I hereby decree for all the lovers out there... National Proposal Day. For anybody who has ever fallen in love and has wanted to be able to ask the big question, today is your day. Make sure that you tell the people how much you love them, but also make sure you tell them at the biggest ring possible what they mean to you. That does it for me here on Just Saying It. I'll be back tomorrow to break down more of what we saw from the NBA, from the NCAA tournament, NFL free agency, and a plethora. It's Cole Thompson with Just Saying It, signing off. Have a good Monday, folks. Same time tomorrow. Later.